Peter Donalds here in for Kathleen Dunn, Friday the 13th. Today, we're going to be talking about superstitions. So I want to invite your calls starting right away. I want to talk to lots of folks today. Get on the phone, 800-486-8655. I want to hear about your favorite superstition, whether it's a four-leaf clover or walking under a ladder or crossing the path of a black cat, whatever it is, which ones do you hold on to? Maybe you've got some odd superstitions that the rest of us haven't heard about. I want to hear from you, too. Friday the 13th, why are we superstitious? Why do we hold on to these ideas? And where do they come from? I'd love to hear if you have some inside information there. Our guest this hour has some inside information, but we haven't been able to reach him quite yet. He's Harry Oliver, author of Black Cats and April Fools, Origins of Old Wives' Tales and Superstitions in Our Daily Lives. But we can certainly, with your calls, get through some of the hour while we try to reach him, because what better expert than yourself for knowing your own irrational fears? That's what I want to hear this hour from you. 800-486-8655. Tell me about the superstitions that you hold on to on this Friday the 13th. The local number here in Milwaukee is 414-227-2050, and you can use that number if you're in the 414 area code and want to dial us directly. So again, 800-486-8655, the toll-free. Trick-or-treat on Halloween. The most obvious one of all for today, why is the number 13 unlucky? Where did that come from? And how did it get tied up with the date of the day of Friday? Why is Friday the 13th unlucky? What else is on our list? Let's see. Of course, the black cat crossing the path. Is that something that still concerns you? I never quite understood the spilling of the salt. And then, I don't know, what do you throw it over your shoulder or something? I'm not sure about that. Breaking a mirror. I'm mentioning some of the common ones. I want to hear from you which ones you hold on to and if you actually abide by these rules. Or is there something a little unusual that you've come up with in your family, a superstition? Sports athletes are famous for superstitions, rubbing someone's head or carrying something in your pocket or not changing your socks for 3 and 4 games at a time. I think maybe I did that when I played high school basketball. So superstitions in your life is what we're looking for today, and your calls are welcome. First, we go to Patty in Madison. Hi, Patty. You're on the air. Oh, sorry about that. Now you're on the air. Hi, Patty.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Well, I've got one.
Okay, what is it?
And I'm an educated professional person, and yet if anyone ever says something bad is going to happen, I make them say poo-poo.
you don't say it yourself, you make them say it.
Well, I'll say it, and I'll make them say it as well.
Okay, so for example, I'm going to say, I'm looking at the sky, it looks like we're going to have a really bad rainstorm. It's going to ruin our picnic, Patty.
Yeah, poo-poo. Say poo-poo, Peter.
I have to say poo-poo.
Uh-huh.
Where did you come up with that one?
Well, I think it must be a Jewish thing, because I don't think I'm the only person who does it. But I'm not really certain. I make my kids do it. I have coworkers who do it.
Well, I haven't heard of that one. And do your kids, friends, and coworkers oblige?
They do.
Then you don't have to nag them too much about it?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for getting us started, Patty.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Ron is calling from Minocqua. You know why the number 13 is unlucky?
Yeah, number 13 is real unlucky for me. I work construction. Anytime I look out on a job site and I see 13 dead guys, I know something bad's about to happen.
Or maybe just did happen.
No. Not to them. For me, it's unlucky.
If I look,
okay. That was it. I was just having a little fun.
Okay, Ron. Thanks for the call. Hey, you're in construction? Do you ever work on large buildings, like more than 13 floors?
More than 13. There's not a 13th floor in most buildings.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, if that was a myth or if that's the truth.
No, that's true. They skip number 13 and go, it's one. A lot of elevators, 1 through 12 and then 14 and up.
Okay.
I don't know about any more, but it used to be that way.
Used to be that way, yeah.
Sure.
Okay, thanks a lot, Ron.
All right. Have a good day. Bye. Good,
you too. Carolyn is calling from Madison. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi.
So what's your superstition?
Well, my mom always told me, and I still do it and drives everybody crazy. If you're walking down the street with a friend or your husband or somebody special, don't let something taller than the two of you go between you, or it'll break your friendship. Hmm. So if we're walking down the street and somebody goes on one side of a light post, I will back up and go around and get on the same side.
Oh.
Or make friends do it, and they get really irritated. But
yeah.
I can't get rid of that one.
So you learned this one from your mother, you say?
Yes, dear mom.
And have you heard this from anyone else, or is this unique to your family?
I don't know. Everybody thinks I'm weird when I bring it up, so well, I think it might be unique.
Okay. Well, Carolyn, I don't think you're weird at all.
Okay. Thanks.
thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. I understand our guest is on the line. Happy to have Harry Oliver with us, and we'll be getting back to your calls, so keep them coming at 800-486-8655. Harry Oliver is author of Black Cats and April Fools, Origins of Old Wives' Tales and Superstitions in Our Daily Lives. Harry Oliver, welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
Very good, very good. On this Friday the 13th, anything unlucky happened to you yet?
Apart from waking up and having to go to work, but no.
Yeah, and apart from...
It's all gone very smoothly. Although I did read, actually, this morning in the paper that... you probably wouldn't have heard of them, but there's a massive insurance company in England called Norwich Union, and they insure motorists, and they actually have worked out over a five-year period, there's been more claims for car crashes than on any other day. On Friday the 13th, so there you go.
Yeah, and I must point out, as our listeners are well aware, we had some trouble reaching you.
The
phone lines weren't quite working for us, and it took us about 10 minutes to make that work. So our Friday the 13th has bitten us a little bit here.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's interesting the way people... I think can perhaps act as a result of their superstitions, and you know, I think, for instance, with the driving thing, people have probably slightly changed their behavior, and then bad things end up happening.
Is it self-fulfilling prophecy? Do you think?
Indeed, that's what I believe.
Yeah, we're gonna Harry, go to a caller, because before we reached you, a caller called in and said something about having to say poo poo. After you mentioned that something bad might happen. Have you ever heard this?
I haven't, no. That
okay.
sounds interesting.
Bonnie from Milwaukee, she thinks, has an answer for this. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, I know I have the answer. Patty is correct that it is from Jewish tradition, but unfortunately she has it backwards. When you say poo-poo, you're spitting. So because you're too polite to not really spit, you're making a spitting sound. But what you are doing is keeping away the evil eye. So you don't say it when something bad happens. In other words, if you look at a baby and you say, oh, that is such a beautiful baby, poo-poo, meaning evil eye, you didn't hear this, keep away, don't come near me.
Okay.
And it's for good things, not for bad things.
Well,
you can only do well in school, poo-poo.
I see. And the poo-poo is kind of staving off anything that any sort of evil or bad that would come their way.
Keeping away the evil
yeah.
eye. And if you've ever heard the expression kainahara,
mm-hmm.
it's also a Hebrew Yiddish expression, and it means the evil eye.
Okay.
And people pronounce it in many different ways, and it's the same kind of thing, but that's for good. You say, oh, you should have a good marriage, kainahara.
Got it. Bonnie, thank you very much for clearing that up for us. Yeah, that does ring a bell now, the little spit sound, the little poo-poo.
That's a new one to me.
Yeah, that's good. Jewish tradition. We'll have to look that up and add it to the sequel of your book.
It's interesting she mentioned the baby, actually, because talking about sort of praising babies and talking to them, there's quite an interesting superstition in China that says if you praise a baby and say nice things about it, it actually... well, it's a bad omen, and it will attract sort of ghosts and demons. So the custom in China is to actually talk badly of a child in front of it, in front of its parents, and suggest it has no good qualities, because apparently it's good luck. And parents have to convert the bad things and interpret them into good things in their heads. So if I say that's an ugly baby, the parent is supposed to think, oh, it's a beautiful baby.
Okay.
Very peculiar.
Yeah, yeah. Some sense to it, though. It's like talking to plants and they grow better. It's usually positive energy. And if we had a metaphysicist on the line today, he could tell us about that.
Yes, unfortunately, I'm no metaphysicist.
Any quantum physicists in the room or listening? You know, I was going to ask you the first and most obvious question, where did Friday the 13th come from? But you know what? I'm going to let Jim from Oshkosh take a stab at it, and you can tell us if he's right. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hello.
Good morning. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I wanted to note that as soon as the guest got on the line, I looked down at my clock and it said 10:13. So that was kind of fortuitous.
Oh, okay.
I read that Friday the 13th became an unlucky or bad day. The Knights Templar were rounded up by the Pope, who feared their power and the fact that they had acquired so much wealth in medieval Europe. And I think he had all the Knights Templar rounded up and executed down to the last one before a few escaped. And I believe that happened on Friday, October 13th, somewhere in the 10th or 11th century. Whether or not that's the truth or not, that's what I've read in a few books.
That's only what my research showed. I mean, it was the Friday the 13th on October 1307.
Okay.
What it tends to be the opinion of everyone else.
All right, so that's your story too. Jim, did you have something else before we let you go?
I have my little superstition that I always believe in is that whenever something bad happens to me or around me, someone gets sick or somebody gets hurt or loses a job, I immediately have to figure out what are the other two things that are going to immediately happen as well.
All right, bad things in three.
Happen in threes, mm-hmm. And it is always held true. I've always found two other things within the next 20 minutes or so that have happened that are bad. So
okay.
Always happen in threes.
Jim, thanks a lot. All right. Is the bad things in three more of a self-fulfilling prophecy that we talked about a minute ago?
It's got to be, hasn't it? I mean, what do you think?
Well, I don't know. You're the expert.
it's an expert in the origins of them, but not whether or not they're true. That's the thing.
Yeah. And our Friday the 13th story, have we got that?
That is cited very often as being why Friday the 13th became significant, but also Friday and the number 13 are independently, that they're unlucky in their own right. I mean, the number 13 is in Christian society anyway seen as unlucky because there were 13 people at the Last Supper, supposedly the 13th being Judas. And then Friday, I mean, historically a lot of terrible things have happened once again in Christianity on a Friday, most notably the crucifixion of Christ. So combined together, you know, Friday and 13 have a pretty strong meaning. And then when this execution that the previous caller spoke of happened, it just became set in stone, really.
It sort of solidified it. Okay.
Yeah. Number 13, I mean, did you know about this number of things? You know, most high-rise buildings, I think 80% of them in the world don't have a 13th floor. There's so many omissions in the number 13. It's phenomenal. Hospitals and hotels, most of them don't have a room number 13.
And
the superstition's really grabbed a lot of people.
Yeah, and that's not just older buildings. They continue that to this day?
Yeah. So far, I mean, not always. It's not a, you know, it depends from building to building, but apparently 80%.
Yeah. What is it? What's the power of this, whether it's in our own psyches or in our religious tradition? What is it that holds on?
It is odd. I mean, what I think is that people, whether religious or non-religious, and through history, there's an innate need, I think, in humans to kind of create meaning for themselves through the things that surround them, I think. I think it's almost to do with your own identity. But that's my thoughts on it, really. I really think it must be as simple as that. I mean, obviously, in times gone by, before literacy and words and the internet, you know, thousands of years ago, people really did see things as ominous. You know, especially the moon, the sun, red sky at night, shepherd's delight, all these kind of things.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's our Friday the 13th edition, and we're talking about superstitions, where they come from, origins of all of our favorite superstitions. We'll try to get to as many as we can. Your call's welcome at 800-486-8655, and with the help of Harry Oliver, author of Black Cats and April Fools, we'll get through the hour and have some fun. I'm Peter Donalds, in for Kathleen Dunn, back after this quick break. And we talk superstition on this Friday the 13th with Harry Oliver, author of Black Cats and April Fools. Let's go to Wisconsin Dells, and Pete is on the line. Hi, Pete.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, a quick question. I own a seven-toed cat, and I've heard that ancient sailors believed seven-toed cats brought good luck. and I'm wondering if the guest has any information about this superstition.
Seven-toed cats.
I've never heard of the seven-toed cat, obviously, but I do know that the number seven is certainly a very significant number in terms of superstitions. In the ancient and later medieval world, there were thought to be seven planets, including the sun and the moon, and seven phases of the moon, seven metals, seven ages of man, seven deadly sins, seven graces, seven virtues. It goes on.
Yeah. Seven days, seven directions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously God created, you know, the earth and everything else in 6 days, and the seventh day was the day of rest.
Right.
So it's basically, it's a, as opposed to 13, it's sort of a very, it's a very sacred and meaningful word that is good luck. However, if you do certain things, the classic we've all heard of is breaking a mirror will bring 7 years of bad luck.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot about the seven related there, too. Pete, could you tell us any more about this? What do you know about this? These old sailors and their seven-toed cats?
I've just heard that the old sailors had seven-toed cats. I heard Ernest Hemingway was given one as a gift out in the Florida Keys at one time, and he kept the cat around in his the bar he hung out with for good luck. So those are the kind of things I've heard, and I can tell you, since I've owned the cat, I've had pretty good luck.
Well, good.
How many toes does your cat have?
Seven toes. It's kind of a deformation. It's almost like a small paw grows out off the side of its paw. It walks around just fine.
All right. I didn't realize you've actually got one. That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it black by any chance?
No, tabby.
See, I guess if you had a black seven-toed cat, the two things would cancel each other out.
Then, you know, there you go.
Just have a regular cat. Thanks a lot, Pete.
Thanks, guys.
Let's talk with Leo. He's calling from Kendall. Hi, Leo.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
You were talking about superstitions that tend to hang on in the family or whatever.
Yeah.
And one that works with us is we're in a conversation, somebody talks about something that has been working and it's always been effective or whatever, and somebody says, oh, knock wood before you jinx it.
So all right.
The knock wood superstition. And I'll listen to your comments offline. Thanks.
All right, thanks. Knock wood. Harry Oliver?
Knock on wood. Well, that's another classic. It's quite a simple one. I think most people agree that it just comes from the fact that the wood corresponds to the cross, and it's good luck to not make a nod to once again a Christian thing. It's making a nod to God and good fortune, you know, and sort of it's almost like a physical prayer in a sense. That doesn't sound slightly odd, but knocking on wood, that's exactly where it comes from.
Hmm. So in non-Christian nations, we wouldn't see this as a common little superstition.
I don't know. It's not, definitely not. It's not. It's something that's definitely peculiar to the West, or at least Christian countries. Yes. Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. I've seen people jokingly. It's become more and more common. They knock on their head. Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
They knock on wood and they knock on and they knock on their head.
Knock on their head. Whether it's because they think their heads are full of sawdust, I'm not sure.
I mean, it's just a little self-deprecating joke, but I've seen it so many times now, I think it's becoming more and more common.
Oh, I'll have to start doing that.
Okay. Thanks, Leo. Steve is calling from Madison. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how you doing, Peter and Harry?
Good.
Hi there.
I was calling because I lived in Taiwan for a couple of years where they speak Chinese, and just like the number 13 was, you know, an unlucky number here in English and a lot of, you know, countries around the world, the number four is an unlucky number. In Chinese, Chinese being a tonal language, the word, the four, si, sounds like the word death. So a lot of buildings in Taiwan and China, even in Canada when I went there, don't have the fourth floor, which I found pretty interesting. So
that's very interesting.
Another interesting fact is that when I worked at a school there, people didn't want to sign their name in red ink, which they thought if they did, they would die.
So that's okay.
Another interesting fact that
because of the association with blood.
I really don't know because red at weddings, people would give red envelopes to with money, you know, and that was a lucky gesture. But when you signed your name in red, it was unlucky. So.
It's weird. I mean, often the same, like you point out that kind of strange irregularity or contradiction almost. It exists in so many of them. I mean, you know, you just mentioned black cats a second ago. And depending where you live, you know, and what culture you're in, a black cat can also be lucky as well as unlucky. and it, you know, depends on whether it's walking towards you or away from you. And there's all these tiny details that are, it's really quite a mystery, actually, how these things emerge to be such a sort of such precise, you know, meaning of a certain thing.
Yeah. And each emerging from their own culture. Steve mentioned the color red. I didn't see it, but I saw the promos for it. Public television had a documentary on entirely about the color red. And I remember just from the trailer I saw all the different significant meanings of the color red, both good and bad.
That's a very interesting one. I should perhaps look into for the next book, I think.
Yeah, we should find that. The color red. I forget what the title of the documentary was called, but we should find that.
The China one is very interesting. It's actually, I've got it in my book here. Apparently, they also never Chinese people try and avoid license plates with the number 4 on.
Yeah.
Or house numbers. So.
We hear of the Chinese culture as being having a lot of superstitions. Is one culture the king of this, or does each culture have their own set?
I'd say the latter. I mean, without, you know, it's hard to be very precise, you know, yeah, about the number of superstitions in any culture, because in to be honest, they're actually infinite. I mean, as we've had today, you've had your, you know, different callers with their own idiosyncratic superstitions. Some of them probably only exist within certain families or certain areas.
Yeah.
So I'd say it's very hard to quantify. I wouldn't like to try and give an authoritative answer on it.
Sue in Milwaukee, what have you got to add here?
Hi. You had the lady on talking about when two friends were walking and there was an intervening tall object, and she said they both had to pass on the same side to avoid breaking the friendship.
Right.
We had the same sort of thing, but when we came to the thing, we walked on separate sides, but we would both say bread and butter. Now, I'm from the western part of the state, but I have a question also. I have a friend who would not kill a spider. She said it was bad luck. Her home was just, you didn't dare look in the corners of the floor. And why? She would kill, I mean, ants, she was an enemy to all the time. Why would she not specifically kill spiders? And I will take your answer off the air. This has got to be something. Her grandmother, her mother, you know, I mean, this was a family thing. They would not kill a spider.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Sue.
Thank you.
Spiders.
Yeah.
What I always this was once again something I grew up with, is never kill a spider. It's, you know, it's a terrible sin. I think the logic behind it is that basically because they prey on other insects and thus, you know, they're useful to have around the house. Also, there are powers attributed by some people to spiders' webs. Cobwebs are reputed to stop bleeding, or they were anyway, if applied to a wound. And in folklore, the spider protected the infant Jesus from discovery by King Herod's men, because he weaved a web to hide them. So, you know, that's perhaps an explanation. There are some circumstances when killing a spider is lucky. Apparently, if you wear one in a bag around your neck, as it decomposes, it can cure disease. Although I wouldn't offer that as a recommendation to anyone.
Although the first explanation you gave, just kind of the logical one, that spiders eat other insects, some superstitions do have those kind of very rational origins, don't they? You
very
mentioned in your
so.
Book the hat, wearing the hat in bed.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's that one. And one which I think is great is, once again, this is to do with things being in threes. Never light 3 cigarettes with the same match. It comes out of a specific period in history. It harks back to the Boer War. And snipers from enemy lines, you know, in trenches, would notice a match being struck on the other side to light a soldier's cigarette. If the match was left alight enough to light three soldiers' cigarettes, then that would give them enough time to focus and fire a shot off. So I suppose it was a lesson that was learned at some point that this was a bad idea, and that then became a sort of superstition.
Which existed
to this day.
The origins of superstitions on this Friday the 13th. We take your calls at 800-486-8655. Your questions about a common superstition, or maybe you want to share an unusual one that maybe it's just you and your family. We'd like to hear that one too. Ruthie is calling from Madison. Hi, Ruthie.
Hi. I've got a couple ones for you guys. First of all, my family is huge into the poo-poo-poo. We spit 3 times.
Okay.
But that's very important in our family.
All right.
But also, I have a friend from India who, when she took her newborn daughter to meet her family or at a party, and too many people complimented her daughter, and they said too many good things about her daughter, so they took, she took a black eyeliner pen and drew a big mark behind her ear to do sort of like an imperfection, I guess, so as not to be too good, I guess.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that sort of relates. I don't know if you've, how long you've been listening to the one we talked about in China, about how it's unlucky to say nice things about a baby in front of its parents.
That's right. That's exactly right.
It's very peculiar. I mean, what do you think about the logic of it? Why do you think that?
Oh, it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
but tell me, I'm interested. So I'm superstitious about saying too many good things.
Right, because you think it is courting bad luck.
Yeah, of course. And I think that, you know, if I say something, you know, if I say, oh, I call my friend and I say, so the week is going really, really well, and I'll immediately say, oh, no. I didn't mean to say that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Do you take a compliment badly then?
No.
No, okay. So you have a lovely voice, Ruthie.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, good. I was testing her on that.
I've got one more.
Okay.
And it's Israeli. And a lot of my friends from Israel, when they're pregnant, they will not put a nursery up for the baby. They won't have a baby shower, won't do anything. You won't talk about it. I mean, you know, you'll say, hey, you're pregnant, obviously. But, you don't give gifts for the baby before the baby's born.
Hmm. Have you heard of that one?
No, I mean, because, of course, the baby shower is a very popular thing to do, isn't it?
Not in Israel.
Huh. Not in Israel, no.
Okay.
Evidently not. And what's the thing of that? Is it the similar logic to before? Just sort of.
I think it's sort of an extension. I think it's going one step beyond, maybe three or four steps beyond, you know, not courting bad luck.
Yeah.
They're really not courting bad luck.
Yeah. Hmm. Ruthie, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay. Next to Dave in Madison. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
You're on the air.
I just wanted to point out, since you were talking about the number 13 and how it's an unlucky number from a superstitious standpoint, just kind of a caveat to that, there were 13 colonies that formed the United States, so by that logic, we would vicariously be the most unlucky of countries, presuming people bought into the number 13 concept.
Yeah. Dave, thanks for that. I hadn't heard that association before. Did anything from the colonial days come up in your studies of superstitions? Harry Oliver?
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, I must admit, that's very interesting. I've never heard of it. And I obviously did read quite a lot about the number 13, and that never been mentioned. You might be the first person to ever observe it.
Did you happen to see or hear about the film recently, The Number 23?
No, what's that?
It was a film here in the U.S., I didn't see it myself, but the number 23 became significant, and all of these hidden meanings and dangers and signals coming from the number 23. And the star of the film, Jim Carrey.
Oh, Jim Carrey! I have seen the efforts over here.
He was out doing, you know, promoting the film on Letterman and elsewhere, and he'd always come up with these great equations that came up to the number 23, and it always sounded very familiar. And I was thinking in my head the other day, if you know, about that, and I added up. It only took me one try or two tries. I added up my birthday with my son's birthday, and the date, the numbers of the month and the days added up to 23.
How peculiar!
And it was only on the second try. So I guess this is the kind of thing, sort of like this, the separation from Kevin Bacon. You can just make happen.
Yeah, it's. I mean. That's fascinating. It's very funny. Is it a good film?
I didn't see it. I don't know. Ronnie, did you see it? Ronnie didn't see it either. Okay. Pat is in Dunn County. Hi, Pat.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My family is just superstitious to the nth degree, and there are three things we always do. And I remember traveling across the country, we always wished on a white horse. You'd lick a finger, and you put it in the palm of the other hand, and then you'd stamp it. And the second one is that we always, always, when we move, and my family's moved a lot, you leave behind all your old brooms and whisk brooms and floor brooms so that when you moved into a new house, you could sweep clean. And the third one is that when we give a gift that has a sharp edge or a blade, we have to absolutely put a copper new penny on each one of the blades so that we don't cut our friendships.
Wow, good stuff. Okay, let's take these three. Wishing on a white horse. Harry Oliver?
Wishing on a white horse. Well, yeah, I mean, as far as I know, it's believed that encountering a white horse is bad luck. If you encounter one, especially on the way to a funeral, superstition dictates that you should use the spit to dispel any bad luck this may bring. Some versions of it, you know, state that you should spit on a finger or the sole of a shoe. Other people say that you should actually spit on the horse itself. But
well, that's no good.
A lot of evidence for it having been practiced and being a widespread belief in the 19th and 20th centuries.
Yeah. Well, horses played such a central role in human life for so many years. I imagine a lot of lore grew up around horses.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, they were a treasured, valued possession. And so if things happened, I don't know, at the beginning of a journey, for instance, if your horse fell over or stumbled, very bad omen. And often travelers would actually turn around and not continue a trip if something along those lines happened.
Hmm.
They were also believed to be particularly vulnerable to witchcraft. So a horse that refused to work or even move was thought to have been sort of possessed or bewitched.
And let's move on to leaving brooms behind. Is this something you've heard of?
Leaving brooms behind.
Yeah, in order to get a clean sweep of the new residence.
I can't remember it. I can't remember if it's in the book, actually, because I haven't got the book to hand. But
well, Pat from Dunn County seems to know that one. I don't know. I'm trying to remember my last couple of moves, and I think the last time I moved, there were some brooms left behind, now that I think about it. How about whenever you give a blade, anything with a blade, a knife or something like that, as a gift, you include a copper penny.
A copper penny? No, I've never heard about that either.
Okay, Pat, you got a couple of good ones.
Yeah.
I wonder how widespread they are. Thanks very much for calling in. I bet you hear a lot of, do you keep track? Do you keep in little notes here? I bet you hear a lot of new ones or unusual ones.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. The more people you speak to, it just balloons, really, and escalates. And you end up with a book the size of an encyclopedia.
Yeah.
Noted down and tried to find out, everyone's idiosyncratic expression.
Have you got of the common ones that we hear about a lot? Actors say break a leg. I don't know, the rabbit's foot. We could name many. Do you have a favorite or one that tends to surprise people when you tell us the origin?
Yeah, I mean there are a number, but I mean one which I find quite amusing that I like is the. There's a theory that often a lot of athletes say you should abstain from making love before being in competing in a sporting event, and this has been a widespread belief. You know, Muhammad Ali typically very famously refrained from intercourse for 6 weeks before fighting, and Roger Bannister. I don't know if anyone's heard of him, but he was the first man to break the 4-minute mile. Runner.
Yep, that's right.
He remained celibate before his run. And the thing behind it, of course, is that sex expends the energy that needs to be conserved. But it's interesting. It's just an old wives' tale because it doesn't consume that much energy, in terms of calories. And scientists have sort of argued in recent times that sex before a match or a race should actually improve your performance because it increases testosterone levels, which is obviously great in competitive events.
Huh.
So boxing, for instance, in Muhammad Ali's case, he would have done well to have enjoyed himself a bit more for a few weeks, perhaps.
Well, athletes take note. A good public service today from Harry Oliver. A quick break and then right back with our guest. Harry Oliver is author of Black Cats and April Fool's Origins of Old Wives' Tales and Superstitions in Our Daily Lives. We thought it'd be fun to talk about this on Friday the 13th, and indeed it is. Your calls right after this break. Superstitions on this Friday the 13th. Back to the phones we go, and Ron in Madison. Hi, Ron.
Thanks. From age 6 to 13, I attended a two-room school. Some students repeated, quote, step on a crack, break your mother's back. And that was stuck with me beyond those 7 years. They generally avoided stepping on the cracks in the sidewalks outside the building, but both classrooms had 9-inch square tiles, and nobody seemed to be careful about where they stepped inside the classroom. In those years, I lived, grew up in a house with many hardwood floors, and there we had cracks every 2 inches apart, and I never recall anyone trying to avoid stepping on those cracks. So I didn't know if the guest or anyone else knows the origins of that, if you consider it an old wives' tale or a superstition. An explanation for Friday the 13th is that on Holy Thursday, 13 people sat down to have supper, the Passover supper. The next day, on Friday, the leader of that group was executed, killed. The thing you need to keep in mind is that in Jewish or Hebrew calendars, cultures, a new day begins at sundown, not at midnight like the Roman tradition that we follow. So both the Last Supper and the execution occurred on the same calendar day, which we would call Friday, and there were 13 people involved. So that's one explanation for that combination.
That is a good detail that we hadn't considered. But we did talk about that earlier. The breaking of the back, though, and all the crack stepping. Ron, is your mom okay?
After 12 kids, she's kind of worn out.
Okay. So I bet you have the origins to this one, Harry Oliver.
I do. Yes. Yeah. Stepping on a crack is all over the world very famous. And the rhyme, stepping on the crack, break your mother's back, is familiar to me and many others. It goes back to the 19th century, it seems, when a racist version of the rhyme was popular. The version I don't actually have, but the logic behind it is slightly unclear. But the original rhyme suggested that were one to step on cracks, one would have a black baby, during which, we're talking about a racist time now. That was, perhaps to some people, considered unlucky. So it's quite an unpleasant origin. The later version of the rhyme, the earlier version, was step on a crack and your mother will turn black. So it changed as well. But it wasn't until the 1950s, actually, that the non-racist equivalent now, step on a crack, break your mother's back, became, used. Another superstition around cracks links the amount of cracks you step on and the number of dishes you'd break that day. So the origins of, once again, they're unclear, but it is a superstition that exists.
Do you find in your research that an origin might be something really unpleasant, like a racist origin? Are there other cases of that where the answer is something you'd rather not have learned?
Yeah, to be honest, in the book, in my research for this book, I didn't come across. That was the only origin that was in any way grounded in sort of racial politics or racial issues and race.
I know there's an expression that I try not to use anymore, and that's rule of thumb. Do you know that?
Right, okay.
Do you know the origin of that expression?
I don't, but do you know why?
Well,
why don't you use
apparently,
it?
What I've heard is the rule of thumb is that the switch or the twig or whatever, the branch that you used to whip your wife needed to be at least the width of your thumb.
Gosh.
Back in, I don't remember the exact origin, but I don't use that expression anymore because if I do, if I think of it, that always comes to mind, and it's just it's a horrible thought.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's all not use rule of thumb anymore. That's my little preaching for the day.
There's an interesting along those lines. There's another classic is saying, after someone sneezes, saying God bless you.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people claim that the expression goes back to the plague that we had in this country, the Great Plague, where fear of catching the disease was very widespread. And so counter-expressions were apparently invented to get off, to ward off evil and disease. So someone would sneeze, you'd say, God bless you. But it's actually a theory which, though very popular, I think there's a contradiction because the expression existed in ancient times. And also many of the symptoms of the Great Plague were actually blisters on the body, rashes and high fever, and sneezing wasn't part of it wasn't something that you did with the plague. So it's interesting. In the ancient world, it was thought that sneezing marked the visitation of a god who'd temporarily possessed the body of a sneezer, or simply made his presence felt. So God bless you in that case actually meant God blesses you. It was a positive thing. It was, you know, not saying, oh, you've just emitted evil.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
God has just blessed you. You were just visited by a spirit for a moment there.
That's correct.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so that's an interesting one because it's just so all-pervasive, the God bless you thing, and, you know, it used to mean a different thing.
Is Gesundheit a direct translation of that?
Gesundheit.
Yeah.
Good health, isn't it?
I guess I didn't know. Kathy in Spring Valley. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have two small things to add. First, I come from a family of bird watchers, and in our family, the first robin that you see in the year determines whether he's flying, you'll have a great year. If he's sitting on a branch, you'll have a mediocre year, and if he's sitting on the ground, you'll have a lousy year. And then the second one is a short story of a cat that we had that was pure black with gorgeous yellow eyes, and we named him Friday the 13th, and our cat Friday died on Friday the 13th in June of 2003.
Wow.
So I'll hang up and listen to your comments on the air.
That's pretty good. Okay, well, I guess you're going to say that's just a coincidence. Do you take pause once in a while when something you hear a story like that, the Friday the 13th dying on his own day?
I'll be honest, no, not
okay.
really.
All right.
I mean, I can see how these things. It's very tempting. I think often to earlier on, I read apparently that if you're date of birth, the day you were born, so I was 28, if it's divisible by 7, then you're going to have a long and happy life. And I thought, oh, that's nice. But then I thought, no, it probably doesn't mean much. But it's interesting, the bird...
The robin.
Comments, yeah.
And you should know the red-breasted robin is the Wisconsin state bird.
Oh, is it? Right, okay.
Yeah.
The belief in... Well, there's a specific belief about robins that harming them is very bad luck. So that goes back to the 18th century. Killing one apparently would bring a lifetime of bad fortune, and breaking its leg would result in the same injury to the culprit, the breaker. And people who used to collect birds' eggs and children would be warned never to interfere with the nest of a robin, because apparently if they did that, then their fingers would grow crooked. And it came from the idea that the robin is a sacred bird, which enjoys the divine protection.
I had never heard that. I knew as a child, or from my childhood, that it was the state bird, and that if we harmed it, there'd be a hefty fine.
Yeah. Well, but, it goes a little deeper than that.
I guess so.
That's right. There is an old saying that goes, little cock robin and little Jenny Wren are God Almighty's little cock and hen.
And now Kathy adds the added feature here that depending on the first sighting, whether it's seated, standing, or flying, you get tells your fortune for the next year.
Yeah, I haven't
kind
heard
of
that about robins.
Kind
I've
of a Groundhog's Day.
Cuckoos.
Okay. That reminds me of Groundhog's Day. The groundhog sees the shadow and it tells the future of the weather and.
Indeed. What a wonderful film as well.
Yeah. Thanks, Kathy, for your call. And Anne from Madison is next up. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I want to follow up on two things that your previous caller, Ruthie, said. One is that the thing about bringing bad luck if you compliment babies, I think that's a sort of general Jewish thing because I'm Jewish and I'm from New York, and that was a huge thing in my family. You didn't even talk about the name of the baby, the possible names, because if you gave a name, then that would bring even more bad luck, and you just wanted to, you know, hold off on any of that until you knew that the baby was going to be fine and safe. And along those lines, in my family, the story of my aunt, who was born in the early 20th century, and as a child, she had a terrible illness, and they changed her middle name to ward off the angel of death. I mean, they wanted to, you know, they consciously did that so that would, you know, bring her good luck and make her better. Help make her better. So I thought it was a wonderful one. And the other superstition in my family that I always loved was my grandmother always said that when you hiccup, it means that someone you love is thinking about you.
Oh, I like that. Okay. Thanks for the call. Anything there you want to jump on, Harry Oliver?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, are you still on the line?
Yes, no. I am.
Oh, you are. I'm just wondering, why do you think it's such a... the such a strong Jewish thing?
Oh, we're you know, maybe Jews are superstitious by culture. You know, so many bad things have happened to the Jews over the years
that you will do anything.
Yeah, and you want to, and the big, you know, children are of course important to all of us, but you know, especially I think some of it was after the Holocaust. You know, my grandparents and parents, everybody was really superstitious then that nothing bad should happen to us, and you know, especially to babies.
Yeah.
So I think that might be part of it.
It makes a lot of sense.
Harry Oliver, is it a matter of maybe the closer you are to your ethnic heritage, the more likely you are that you're going to hold on to these things, as opposed to the very, very homogenized American that we think of often far removed from their origins?
Yeah, I would definitely say that follows. I suppose it makes logical sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That the more enclosed and isolated from, as you say, a homogenized culture anyone is, then that the more likely traditions get passed on orally.
Mm-hmm.
And super, you know, that there's no one around to really question what's accepted.
Yeah. Anne, thanks a lot for your contribution. And Ron is calling from Dunn. Hi, Ron.
Hello. I am calling to try to alleviate your guilt over the use of rule of thumb.
Oh, good. Okay.
A few years ago, my wife and I were in England and purchased a book called Dictionary of Idioms and Their Origins. And I looked up rule of thumb when I heard you, mm-hmm. and here's what it says. It says the phrase has been in figurative use since the late 17th century. There are two theories about its origin. In Roman times, here's theory one, in Roman times it was estimated that the measurement of the last part of the thumb above the top joint would fit roughly 12 times into the larger measure of a foot. Thus, the foot was split into 12 inches, parentheses, the French called them pouces, meaning, and I could be mispronouncing that, meaning thumbs, parentheses, and it remained a standard measure for centuries.
Okay.
The second, an alternative theory, is that although is not as well known, the theory is that the temperature of fermenting ale is the temperature of was checked by dipping the thumb into the brew. It is said that in Yorkshire, such ale was referred to as thumb brewed. So nothing about whipping your wife.
Well, good. I mean, I'm sorry if I passed on any specious information here, but I'm happy to hear the report. Thanks, Ron.
Well, I accept your apology.
All right. Take care. Thanks.
Or you can now use that phrase willy-nilly.
I guess I can. Boy, it's changed my whole life here.
And enjoy it.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Dennis is calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. On the Internet, there's a socialist cachet called Resistance MP3s. And in a speech on origins of Christianity given by Colin Sparks, he says that the number of the beast in the Christian Bible, they got that wrong. They misspelled Julio Caesar, or popularly known as Julius Caesar. They misspelled his name, and it was supposed to be 653, but they misspelled it, and it became 666.
So 666 is just a typo?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Julius Caesar, of course, you know, he was redistributing wealth, and that's why he was assassinated.
Yeah. I don't know, Harry Oliver, does that ring a bell for you? Ever hear any of that?
No, I mean, I just thought it was you know, in the Revelation, a number of the beast.
Yeah.
666 is given. Yeah. I mean, what interesting to add on to that is obviously the Great Fire of London, which, you know, most people heard of in 1666, gave the number of the beast once again a very frightening resonance.
Do you, in your research and then your subsequent talking with the public as you are today, do you ever run into trouble when you butt into religion and people maybe aren't happy with what you're finding?
I mean, it's one of those things. We obviously, through my publisher, we'll get letters disagreeing or letters, you know, setting me straight about, certainly in the author's opinion anyway. But I enjoy it, to be honest. It's nice having so many contradictory opinions. And I've done a previous book on the origins of words and phrases, which made me think I should put a rule of thumb in there. But it's a phenomenal response. You know, huge amount of people writing in, and And I indeed do update the books with people's comments when they go for to be reprinted.
Yeah. Time for maybe just one more quick one from Edith in Madison. Hi, Edith.
Hello.
Hi.
I grew up in Sheboygan in Oshkosh and have a friend now here in Madison who grew up in Middleton. And we're now living in a retirement center, and leaving the dining room one day, we came to this big pillar, and she went one way and I went the other, and I said, bread and butter. And she said, bread and butter. And I said, where did that come from? She says, I don't know. And I've talked to a couple other people from Wisconsin who knew that too, but didn't know where it came from either. And it didn't have anything to do with how high something was. It had to do with whatever was in your way as you walked along. And so we just automatically split up and came back together and said that, and we hadn't done this for maybe 7-8 years.
All right. Well, let's ask our guest. That was based on a call early in the hour. Bread and butter. Have you heard this?
I've never heard it, no. Just like the poo-poo. I don't know if it's so much more of an American thing, but never heard of that.
Okay. Well, we'll let you go. Thanks for so much information. We'll have to have you back because I know there's more to talk about. This was fun. Thank you.
No, thanks so much. I've really enjoyed myself.
All right. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Harry Oliver is author of Black Cats and April Fools, Origins of Old Wives' Tales and Superstitions in Our Daily Lives. I want to wish everyone good luck for this Friday the 13th. And have a great rest of the day. Thanks very much to Rhonda Fanning, who produced the program, also on called the Screen the Calls today. I'm Peter Donalds, in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network.